Hi, this is Ed Fitzpatrick. If you enjoy local politics as much as I do, be sure to join our friends at Rhode Island PBS for the show A Lively Experiment. Hosted by Jim Hummel, the weekly series features journalists, pundits, and politicians debating the stories and issues that matter most to us Rhode Islanders. Tune in to A Lively Experiment and be part of the conversation. Fridays at 7 p.m. on Rhode Island PBS and wherever you get your podcasts. From the Boston Globe, this is Rhode Island Report. I'm Ed Fitzpatrick. Welcome back to the podcast where we bring you big conversations from our very small state. My colleague Brian Amaral has been covering plans for the Tidewater Landing Soccer Stadium project in Pawtucket. This weekend, he covered the home opener for the Rhode Island FC team. He's here to tell us about the game and what he's uncovered about the financing of the stadium. Brian, thanks for coming in from East Providence this morning. How was the bridge traffic?
You know, like a lot of days, it was that 10 or 15 minutes they talk about. But if you add up 10 or 15 minutes every day for 2 years, that's about 8 days of additional traffic. So not very good.
So over the weekend, you covered the opening match for the state's brand new professional soccer team, Rhode Island FC. So first, tell us where they played.
Yeah, they played at Bryant University Stadium up there in Smithfield. It's a temporary home because they're not done building their stadium in Pawtucket. So about 5,000-seat capacity stadium up at Bryant University.
And who won?
They were playing New Mexico United. The boys from Albuquerque, as I just made up, came into town. They scored the first goal, New Mexico did, in the 92nd minute. So this is extra time, in stoppage time.
Oh, wow.
Rhode Island FC came back, drew level, and the game ended 1-1.
That's pretty dramatic.
Exciting. Yeah, it was very
exciting.
The crowd went pretty wild. It was a good way to start a brand new team with a pretty dramatic draw.
How big was the crowd?
You know, it was sold out. I would describe it as pretty packed. You know, I didn't see a lot of empty seats there. It was a really good atmosphere. People were really excited. The parking lot opened like 3 hours early. I got there a little bit after the parking lot opened, and there were already like dozens and dozens and eventually hundreds and then thousands of people, going out there to enjoy this game.
And you talked to some of them. What did they tell you about why they came to the game?
A lot of it was love of soccer. A lot of it, people were talking about, you know, we lost the Paw Sox. You want to support a professional state team that's not affiliated with a different team like the P. Bruins, obviously. You know, we have some great college teams here. This is a professional team, an independent professional team in Rhode Island. A lot of people said that they wanted to come out and support that and come, you know, a sport they love, a state they love, all those things coming together. And it was a really nice day, too.
I saw you spoke to Governor McKee at the match. What did he say?
You know, he said what he has said for a while now, that this is going to be a good project for the state. You know, obviously had to ask him about the financing of the soccer stadium deal, but largely defended that along the lines of how he has in the past. You know, I also talked to him about it's been a challenging time for the state. You know, you got the soccer stadium deal with the sticker shock that came along with that. He also had the Washington Bridge closure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said to me, you know, they're putting stuff like 38 studios, cooler and warmer and UHIP in the rearview mirror and looking forward. And, you know, as he puts it, we're getting a brand new bridge. We're also getting a brand new soccer stadium. So brand new bridge, brand new soccer stadium. He's trying to put a positive spin on a lot of these challenges that Rhode Island is facing right now.
And I saw the team owner, Brett Johnson, was there, correct? What did he have to say?
You know, very much along the same lines. He talked about, you know, I asked him about the public financing for this deal, which has gotten a lot more expensive. He said, as a lot of the deals defenders do, that at some point they could refinance these bonds. There is an opportunity. It's not as simple when you're talking about bonds to just say, all right, we're going to pay them down early or we're going to finance them at any time. But there is an opportunity to pay some of these down a little bit early. He talked about that. Calls it a transformative deal for Pawtucket, the stadium that they're supposed to build. It's going to be transformative, they say, not just because of the stadium, but they also want to build a lot of housing, do a lot of commercial development. But we haven't gotten any details about that. Like, where, you know, all right, where's the housing? Like, you talk about how great it's going to be because of the housing. Where is that? And he told me that they're going to have, I think his word was traction, in 90 days. So I told him I will be setting a calendar reminder for 89 days to bother them about where is the housing. That is such an important part of if this project is going to be successful. you're going to need a soccer stadium. That's going to need to get done. They still need to finish building it.
Right,
they
right.
still have some more money they need to line up to get even the soccer stadium done. They need to do a little bit more. Part of the fundraising is still not completely finished. But they also have to build the housing to really achieve this vision.
Right, right. Now, I remember being there when the project was first announced, and there was a lot more to the project than just the soccer stadium. Has it shrunk since then?
Yeah, you know, they were, it shrunk in a couple of different ways. It shrunk. They were originally going to do stuff around the Apex building. That was supposed to be part of it, like a convention event center sort of deal. That got cut out of it. The other way it's sort of shrunk, although I think Deals Defenders wouldn't love the way of describing it, but it really kind of is what happened is the state earmarked a certain amount of money in the city of Pawtucket to put into the broader project. They said, you private guys, you build the soccer stadium, we'll take care of a lot of the stuff around it. In 2022, though, the cost of everything exploded, including the soccer stadium, which went from at that point, it was like, from 80-something, I think, to $120 million-odd dollars. And the state in 2022, as people who follow the story will remember, said, all right, fine, we will earmark the money we were going to do for the other stuff. We're going to put it toward the stadium. And the stadium is going to move forward. And it is, unless they have some more challenges, it is going to get built. And then they're going to deal with the housing and commercial and other stuff another day. And that's what Brett is talking about when I ask him, what about the housing, which is, I think, the most important other thing that they're supposed to build along with this, when he says they're going to have some traction in 90 days. That's what he's sort of talking about. He's talking about that piece of it. A lot of the people who were, the people on Commerce who were against the deal, it was a tie vote, and Governor McKee broke the tie and got this thing over the line, said, really, we're worried that this was going to be a soccer stadium and nothing else. And then they hit construction challenges, and people were worried it's just going to be like a half-built soccer stadium, which would be even worse. And they seem to have gotten there, so we're going to have a soccer stadium. But I think people, there still is a lot of concern out there that it's just going to be a soccer stadium and what else? And, and also, how much more money is the state going to have to, and public taxpayers are going to have to put up to support that other stuff? That remains a big question.
And just give us a few details on what the other stuff entails.
Yeah, they're supposed to do commercial, some retail space. Big project like this, they always have like the mock-ups, like the little cartoon, like stick figures walking around having a good time. There's a lot of that sort of, soccer adjacent stuff, I think, is part of the vision to build into this thing. On the other side of the river, they're also supposed to build a river walk. If it's anything like the vision, it does seem like it would be, as Brett Johnson says, a transformative project. I think the question is, are they going to be able to get it done?
We'll hear more from Brian about the Tidewater Landing Soccer Stadium after a quick break.
When you want to go beyond the headlines, let me recommend Rhode Island PBS Weekly. Rhode Island PBS Weekly is an award-winning news magazine broadcast that gives you the full story, powered by investigative journalism and narrative storytelling. New episodes of Rhode Island PBS Weekly drop Sundays at 7:30 p.m. on Rhode Island PBS. Watch past episodes at ripbs.org/weekly. That's ripbs.org/weekly.
So we're going to dive into the finances in a second, but tell us more about the season for Rhode Island FC. How many matches did they play? Who were their opponents?
So they're going to play 34 matches, 17 home games, I believe. They're playing in the USL Championship, which is the second tier of American men's soccer. They're playing like teams like the Tampa Bay Rowdies, the Charleston Battery, these sort of like smaller cities that have professional teams. They have real players. They have players with Wikipedia profiles. Like, this isn't just some like beer league, jokesters who are going out there. There's Matt Turner, who is the starting goalkeeper for the U.S. men's national team, has played in this league that they're playing in. So there's legit players who come through this league. But it is the second tier of American men's soccer. It's not quite at that MLS level.
So I know you're a soccer fan. Does Rhode Island have a significant soccer fan base beyond your house?
Certainly in my household. I think supporters of the project will talk about the soccer gets pretty high ratings in the Providence TV market. A lot of people watch it. A lot of people are interested in it. People also talk about, the sort of different national communities here from parts of the world that are really into soccer have big presences here. If Saturday's match was any indication, there certainly is an appetite for soccer. It was a full house. People were really excited. It was a lot of kids, a lot of young, a lot of young people running around. But not just that, too. There was, people of all ages were out there. that obviously is the first game, a historic event. Can you do it on Saturday, you know, at 4 p.m. in the middle of the season, you know, when they're playing the, you know, some random team from whatever part of the country that, you know, people might not be as interested in? You know, that sort of remains to be seen. I think this team is going to, you know, you're really going to be able to tell whether or not there is an appetite for soccer. I think, you know, supporters of the project say there is. I think Rhode Island taxpayers should probably be hoping and praying that there is, because this thing needs to pay back a lot of money. The stadium, we're putting a lot of money into the stadium. So, like, let's hope so. Let's hope the 2026 World Cup, which is coming to the U.S., including up at Foxborough, let's hope that spurs a lot of interest here as Rhode Island taxpayers, right? Because this thing is going to need to pay off quite a lot of money in taxpayer money.
And speaking of Foxborough, I mean, aren't the New England Revolution right up there in Foxborough? Is that too far away for locals like me to who never leave the state to go to? You know, is this going to attract a local audience?
You know, a lot of the people there I talked to were also like Revs fans too. And a lot of people were saying, you know, it's good to have a Rhode Island team. You know, Rhode Islanders have a lot of pride in being Rhode Islanders.
Yeah.
As you said, you know, I never leave Rhode Island, you know, is sort of a mantra here. People who are into it are saying that they're going to take a lot of pride in having a Rhode Island team. There's also the possibility of the Revolution. They play at Gillette, which is a football stadium. It's not the same. Like, you can't just throw soccer into a football stadium and have it be the same sort of atmosphere. It's just, it's different. So there's some plans in the works to maybe bring the team up to Everett, Massachusetts, which I think would be really good probably for Rhode Island FC, right? Anybody who's going to go up to Foxborough, even if you're in – I talked to some people from like Attleboro and Bellingham. Are you going to go up to Everett, or are you going to go down to, for the next year, Smithfield, or when it's finally stadium is done in 2025 in Pawtucket, are you going to go down to the stadium in Pawtucket? I think that would probably be – pretty beneficial, I think, if they moved up to Everett. I mean, who wants to drive all that way?
That's right. You think the Washington Bridge traffic is bad? Try to get to Everett from Foxborough.
That's what they do up there, like every day on driving on 93. It's a nightmare. So,
so give us the context here. I mean, Pawtucket's had a hole in its heart, right, since the Paw Sox left.
Absolutely, and you know this deal literally, very specifically, is like Rhode Island raised his hand and said, "We just lost the Paw Sox. Who wants to come in here and replace what we had on the Paw Sox?" They had a couple of different ideas come in. This is the one they picked. Like, this is pretty much a one-for-one replacement. Paw Sox leave, bringing this in instead. It's not in the same place as McCoy was, obviously, but this is to fill the hole that the Paw Sox left, you know, where Benny's used to be. This is going to be, for a long time, I think people are going to compare this to the Paw Sox. I think it's going to be an inevitable comparison, but a lot of opponents are saying it's not affiliated with a professional team like the Boston Red Sox, which has a huge built-in fan base. It's not baseball. Baseball is a proven commodity. Soccer is a new thing that hasn't been shown to succeed here. There actually have been attempts to bring professional teams to Rhode Island. They haven't worked out. Hmm. They've opened and closed. There was the Rhode Island Oceaneers back in the 1970s, closed after like 5 or 6 years. There have been the Stingrays, I think, were a team back in the past. There was the New England Shocks, I talked to the former owner, the Sharks.
A
very Rhode Island guy said, he was telling me about the team he owned. He was calling them the Shocks. And I thought he meant like the electric Shocks.
Electric Shocks.
But they were like the da-na, sort of Sharks.
Yeah.
And they didn't work out. And so, you know, is it in 2024 is different from 1975, obviously.
Right.
Soccer is much more popular now, and it, I think, is getting more popular. Is it going to be popular enough? Tidewater Landing, you know, the stadium at Bryant is like 5,000 or so. Tidewater Landing is going to be 10,000. They're going to have to double that. I think we're, you know, likely going to see the same pattern. Opening day, I'm sure, everybody's going to be excited. Everybody's going to be there. You know, can you do it on a rainy day in Stoke? That's a common soccer expression in England, where some big star comes in, they score a lot of goals, but it's like, can they do it on a rainy day in Stoke?
There you go.
Can they do it when the time is tough? That's going to be the real question here. I think Rhode Islanders are going to have to answer that in 2025 and beyond.
And by the way, you get extra credit for mentioning Benny's on this podcast, so we will invite you back.
Thank you very much.
So bring us up to date on the soccer stadium. When I run by, I see the steel rising, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So they had some construction delays. They started building it in August, late 2022. They stopped building it at a certain point in 2023 because they ran into money problems. They started up again when they sort of fixed those problems. And earlier this year, the taxpayers' bonds, as I'm trying to call them because it's a little bit complicated, but the largest public share of funding for this project, $27 million they're putting in, to this project closed. And we finally got the real specific sense of how much it's going to cost to pay back these bonds. The number had exploded. When they first approved this deal in 2022, they were talking about it'll take about $60 million to pay back these bonds. Now it's going to be $132 million over 30 years to pay back these bonds. It has gotten so much more expensive. And, you know, and everybody who's tried to buy a house in the last year or so knows that borrowing has gotten more expensive. But this is like this is way more expensive than anybody had counted on. Even under the more optimistic projections for how much it was going to cost, the state's own estimates said it's not going to generate enough new tax revenue to pay for itself, that it's not going to pay for itself. So they're going to have to dip into existing tax revenues in this area. Now it's not even being in the ballpark. It's going to be way more expensive than it's going to generate under their projections in new tax revenue. Economists that I have talked to are just, you know, one Victor Matheson at Holy Cross, who studied a lot of stadium deals, described the numbers as, quote, pure insanity.
Pure insanity.
That's the sort of numbers that we're talking about. Defenders of the deal say you can't quantify state pride. You can't quantify the ways that this is going to transform the area. It was for a long time a polluted site on the banks of the Seekonk River. Now it's going to be a place where people can go and enjoy themselves, bring their families. But, you know, the numbers were really sobering when they finally came out earlier this year.
How does this compare to other minor league soccer stadiums?
It is, at this point, the most expensive minor league soccer stadium ever. You know, these stadium deals are, you know, they always one-up each other. So in a year from now, might not be the most expensive anymore, but for now, that's what it is.
So Fortuitous Partners is the private developer of this project, but how much are Rhode Island taxpayers putting into it?
Yeah, there's a couple of different chunks of money, and depends on how you slice and dice the numbers. There's $27 million in state taxpayer-backed bonds. That's the $132 million to pay that back that we're talking about. There's like about $10 million in state tax credits. There's also $10 million the city of Pawtucket put in COVID money. And they also have a property tax abatement deal where they're not going to pay additional property taxes on this for a long time. So depending on how you slice and dice the numbers, we're talking in that more than $100 million.
So going forward, what are you keeping an eye on now regarding Tidewater Landing?
In 90 days, bothering them about the housing, for sure. I'm going to be going to the game, seeing how many people show up. You know, is the team going to win? Like, people will go see a winner, right? Like, if this team is not very good, and they signed good players, like, the team should be actually pretty good. Are they going to win? Like, that's going to be, you know, who wants to go see Rhode Island lose? You want to go see Rhode Island win. So certainly going to be keeping my eye on Rhode Island FC in the standings. Also going to keep an eye on the construction schedule. Are they going to be able to finish when the season kicks off, Tidewater Landing, March 2025? Certainly keep an eye. You can keep an eye, too, on your runs to see how they're doing out there to finish the stadium in about a year from now.
All right, Brian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Ed.
Rhode Island Report is a production of the Boston Globe in collaboration with Rhode Island PBS. Today's episode was produced by Megan Hall with help from Scott Hellman. Audio mixing and mastering by Marissa Ewing of Hemlock Creek Productions. Our music is from APM. Be sure to follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'm Ed Fitzpatrick. See you next week. Looking to binge watch all your favorite PBS shows? You need Rhode Island PBS Passport, Masterpiece, Antiques Roadshow, Rhode Island PBS Weekly, and many more. Watch them all, anytime, and from any streaming device. Learn more about this member benefit at ripbs.org/passport. That's ripbs.org/passport.